Last time we left off with 1 Corinthians 9 and verse 22. We picked up at least part of that, have a few more things to say about it. This is in the context of Paul talking about surrendering some rights. There are some people, when it comes to matters which are not doctrinal matters, they are not moral matters, they are simply matters that people see differently. You often have that in the world, you have that in the church as well. And Paul said, on those matters, I will let people have their way. I'm willing to go ahead and let people believe what they want, do what they want, if it's not a moral matter or if it's not a doctrinal matter. And I do that for this purpose. 1 Corinthians 9:22, let's read it again. He says, to the weak I became weak, that I may gain the weak. I am become all things to all men, that I may save some. We left off with the latter part of the verse. He says that I might save how many? That I might save some. Well, what's that imply, or what does that tell you? I mean, Paul ideally would have been able to save how many people?
Ideally all.
Yeah, ideally everybody. But he's realistic enough to know that people do have free will, and not everybody's going to make the decision to follow God. So he says, I try to model my life in such a way where I can save as many as possible. That's a great lesson for us. As we think about talking to people about God, there are going to be times where perhaps we come away from a conversation, or maybe we've dealt with someone for several weeks, several months, maybe even several years, perhaps even several decades. And at the end of the day, we have to say, that person is not willing to become a Christian, or that person died in sin. I was not able to accomplish what I wanted as far as bringing that person to Christ. Well, we still try. As you think about Luke chapter 15, you have some information there as far as the value of an eternal spirit. You think about the woman who had the 10 coins. She lost one. What did she do?
She went to find it.
All right, she's out there trying to find that lost coin. Any guarantee that she was going to find it?
No.
Nope. But at least she was going to put forth the effort. You think about the fellow who had 100 sheep, and he loses one. Might there be some people who would say, it's only 1 out of 100? You know, animal probably got it. No, not worried about that. There would probably be some people who reasoned that way, but that man left the 99 to go out and search for the one and was able to find it. Well, Paul is, with the Corinthians here, he's asking them to be willing to surrender some of their liberties so that they can go ahead and help out Christians who are weaker. He's making the point that he had done that on a number of occasions. As the book begins, though, how willing do you think the Corinthians were to give in to folks?
Probably not.
Do you remember? I am of who? I am of Paul. I am of Peter. I am of Christ. I am of Apollos. They had their various groups, and they were pretty well set in the way. So there was not a lot of maneuvering room. There was not a lot of negotiation, it seems like, when it came to the Corinthians. But Paul says, look, saving souls, that's always the most important thing. Certainly it trumps when you look at personal freedom, those kinds of things. You find that Jesus did the same kind of thing, did he not? Were there times where Jesus sort of surrendered some liberties? There's some things that he didn't do to try to reach people? Well, let's refresh our memories. You remember John chapter 4? The Lord was tired, stops to rest. This Samaritan woman shows up, and what's Jesus say? What's he do with the Samaritan woman? All right, tries to teach her. So here's the Lord, needed some rest, needed some relaxation, but he doesn't take the day off. He tries to continue to influence people for good. Philippians chapter 2 and verse 7 talks about the fact that he emptied himself when it came to serving others so he could save the souls of people. And you find that today. Sometimes there are people, it feels like, maybe they've had a really hard day, really difficult week, and yet they still, at the end of that, even though they feel depleted as far as the energy, they still try to serve, they still try to help, and still try to be a good influence. Anything that you want to develop over what we've said concerning 1 Corinthians 9:22? All right, let's pick up with that third verse, 23rd verse, if you've just joined us, 1 Corinthians chapter 9. Here Paul said, and I do all things for the gospel's sake, that I may be a joint partaker thereof. Now, this verse is going to read a little differently in the King James ASV, maybe some other translations as well. The King James says that I may be a partaker thereof with you. The ASV leaves off with you. The American Standard Translation says that I may be a joint partaker. What's that sound like? Paul says that I might be a joint partaker. What's the subject under consideration? Joint partaker in what sense? Well, let's define joint partaker. If someone is partaking jointly in something, what's that mean?
Involves more than one person.
Oh, okay. We got a couple answers there that blended together.
Not alone.
All right. They're not alone? Mom?
More than one person.
All right, more than one person. There is the element here of togetherness. And Paul says there's something that I want to partake of. He was also interested in having the Corinthians do the same. What do you think he's talking about? And I do all things for the gospel's sake, that I may be a joint partaker thereof. What do you think he's pointing to? We're going to see this developed a little bit more in verses 24 and 25. What does he want to partake of? What does he want the Corinthians to participate in and join? Oh, I think somebody said it. Heaven, salvation, all the spiritual blessings in Christ. So Paul told the Corinthians here, I'm out trying to help other people. 1 Corinthians 9:22, I'm willing to put myself out, so to speak. I'm willing to surrender some liberties. But at the end of the day, when it comes to my spiritual needs, do I also have to pay attention to myself? Yes. What do you find sometimes with new moms? They have a baby, and maybe it's the first child, maybe they're on to child 3 or 4 or 10, whatever it might be. What happens to mom sometimes in the process? Could be dad too. But mom's trying to care for the newborn or trying to care for 10 kids, and what happens to mom's health?
She gets exhausted.
All right, she's exhausted. And long term, what might happen?
If she doesn't get rest, she can get sick.
She can get sick. And she may get very, very sick. You have that happening with some people who may be involved with caregiving for the elderly. They become so consumed with trying to help somebody else that they don't look after their own physical needs. And that becomes a real problem. Can that issue also happen in the spiritual realm? Is it possible to be so focused on others that you lose yourself spiritually? That can happen in a marriage. It can happen in a lot of different places that people just become so overwhelmed, so consumed by something. So Paul says, look, I'm doing all things for the gospel's sake. And we know that he was very, very committed. In Galatians chapter 2 and verse 20, he says, I have crucified myself with Christ. Well, that can't be literal. What's he mean there? I've crucified myself with Christ.
Pure devotion.
All right. It is an expression of devotion. It is a way of saying I'm very, very committed. Here you see that in 1 Corinthians 9 and verse 23. He says, and I do, that's present tense, continuous action. I do all things, he says, for the gospel's sake. We find sometimes people have sort of a Sunday morning attitude about Christianity. They may show up maybe less frequently than they could. They may not do much as far as any kind of service to God throughout the year. Their interest in Scripture is minimal at best. Is that the picture that you get when it comes to Paul, though?
No.
Now, someone might say, well, look, he was an apostle. He was special. I'm not in that same boat. And there would certainly be some differences between us and Paul. But he was like Jesus in the sense that he was always trying to do the Father's will. That should typify us if we're trying to live the Christian life. One source expressed it this way. I'll give you the quote. Paul was not himself saved by proclaiming salvation to others, no more than the baker is fed by making bread for others, or the physician kept in health by prescribing for others. Paul had his own life to lead, a duty of his own to discharge, a soul of his own to save. Wouldn't it be sad to go to a doctor, I mean a really good doctor, and the doctor, as we were talking about before, is so focused on his or her patients that the doctor does not take care of himself or herself? That'd be bad. Doctor's not watching his weight, keeping up with the blood pressure, and you know, getting some basic blood panels done from time to time. The doctor, if he or she is really going to be helpful to his or her patients, what needs to be done first in the doctor's life? All right, you need to stay healthy. You need to make sure that your physical health is good, just like the mom needs to make sure that her health is, you know, stable and headed in the right direction so she can care for her kids, her family. And that's also true in the spiritual realm. The people who are Christians, especially when you think about people who may be in a position of spiritual leadership like Paul, they need to make sure that they are working on their own salvation as well. Do you remember Philippians chapter 2 and verse 12? Paul said, do what with your salvation? With fear and trembling. Anybody remember that first word? Philippians 2:12. Work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. That's a responsibility of every single Christian. Paul was trying to do that. He wanted the Corinthians to be doing that as well. We're going to see this in just a minute from the perspective of running a race, very similar to what you find in Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 2, that we want to run the race that's set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and the perfecter of our faith. So everybody needs the gospel. That includes the people who are teaching the gospel. They need to apply it as well. If you have preachers who are doing the job that needs to be done before they ever preach a sermon, who should be looking at that lesson first?
The preacher.
Yeah, the preacher should be able to look at that material and say, all right, you know, how does this apply to me? Are there some things that I need to round off in my life? Are there some areas where I'm struggling? So before that sermon is ever preached publicly, it should, in a sense, be preached privately. The guy looking at the material should look at that and say, hey, these are things that I need to be following as well. Anything that you want to add or ask before we move down a little bit more? Okay, a couple hands. Gary, I saw yours first.
One of the boldest illustrations I've seen is when on an airplane, if your oxygen mask is dropped, you're supposed to put one on yourself before you help others.
Yes. That would be perfect illustration. Most of us have gone through that as far as seeing how that works. And if you're not willing to do that, it's going to be really tough to breathe and aid others. So you've got to make sure that you are spiritually rooted, grounded, headed in the right direction. Otherwise, you can't last. It's not going to work out very well.
I have to talk to myself quite a few times. The older you get, the more times you talk about it. That's not what I say. It's what I do. Because I can tell you, and some of my friends, everything, I can tell you anything about salvation. But if I don't show you the way I live, it goes out in the trash pile. And that's been unfortunately. There's so many people call themselves Christians. And this time of the year with what we have going on, that's sad as all get out. They claim to be real strong Christians, but the way they talk and the way they act, especially the way they act, that's not Christian.
Yeah, there's an old saying, don't tell me, show me. And even if people don't use those exact words, that's really what they're saying. I want to see it in you before you try to sell it to me, so to speak.
We should self-examine ourselves before we tell somebody else something. You know, preach to ourselves first and ask yourself, does this apply to me?
Exactly.
Am I doing what I'm telling this person not to do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, self-examination is taught in a lot of passages. We certainly read about it in the Corinthian correspondence. And if people are not willing to do that, they do have some serious issues. That it? Okay, let's go down to 1 Corinthians 9, 24 and 25. Paul says, know ye not that they that run a race run all, but one receives the prize. Even so run that ye may attain or obtain, depending on the translation. And every man that strives in the games exercises self-control in all things. Now they do it to receive a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. In the closing verses of this chapter, Paul is going to use the imagery of athletics. And when you think about sports, there are people who sometimes just play with it a little bit. You might see in the neighborhood, you've got a basketball hoop, and there's, you know, a young person out there kind of shooting some hoops or, you know, maybe doing some relays, and it's not really intense. But then you have some other people who are professional athletes. They're the people who are going to compete in the Olympics, and that's what Paul's describing here. When he looks at Christianity through the lens of athletics, especially Olympics, he's talking about rigid training and being very, very fit spiritually. If you look at the Bible in the New Testament, you have several passages which deal with Christianity from this particular perspective. You've got it in Philippians chapter 3 and verse 14, 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 5, even Luke chapter 13 and verse 24, James 1:12, 1 Peter 5:4, Revelation chapter 3 and verse 11. Now, it's kind of like today. Over the years, I have typically not used a lot of sports illustrations, and the reason for that goes back to school. I remember I had a teacher who really loved sports, but he gave the warning in school. He said, be wary of sporting illustrations, because you may have some people in the congregation who really love sports, but chances are, is everybody going to love sports?
No.
There are going to be some people, and it's tough to get an illustration that's going to connect with everybody. But sometimes you have some guys who, I mean, they're really heavy on sporting illustrations, and I don't think that they're bad. But if they don't connect with some people and you use a lot of them, you're going to have a disconnect there. But if you have people who are really into sports, maybe you've got a congregation, we have a lot of young people, and you're a youth minister, that might be an ideal way to illustrate some things. Well, the Corinthians, if you go back and you look at their culture, they would have loved athletics. They actually sponsored the biennial games. Now, if that's true for you, I mean, it'd be like living perhaps in Indianapolis. And, you know, even if you were not a big fan of racing, if you lived in that city, what would you at least be to some degree familiar with?
Racing.
All right, because, again, you've got the speedway down there, and it's just a big thing. It's a big part of the city. So the biennial games, they were the second importance, second in importance to the Olympic Games. So this was no small thing. This was a big, big thing. You've got people coming into the city for this very thing. They were held only 10 miles from Corinth. So a lot of the people would have been familiar with all the practice. They would have been familiar with all the games. And it would be like somebody going into Indianapolis and using a race car illustration. People would at least get it, even if they were not a big fan of racing. The people also would have had the opportunity to observe the games. Paul was probably in Corinth between AD 50 and 52, and very likely he was present when the games were held, the Isthmian Games, in the spring of AD 51. Now, if you're a preacher, and you're in this culture where you've got the games, you think that's probably going to be some pretty good preaching material, some good way to illustrate the point? That would have been an excellent way. Paul perhaps went to the games to, maybe out of curiosity, maybe he liked sports, but certainly I'm thinking he could have picked up some great sermon illustrations. The Olympic Games began in 776 BC, and they lasted until the 4th century AD. So this was a very long history, big part of ancient culture, and even in our day and time when we think about the Olympics, even for the people who may not be that enthused about certain aspects of it, they'll still say, I want to see this, or I want to see this, and they will watch at least parts of it. If you go back, they did do things a little differently. They participated in the nude. They didn't wear any clothing. And it's also been noted that they were not above cheating. I think that they've tried to eliminate a lot of that in today's world. But the athletes in ancient times were able to receive what would now be equivalent to about $300,000. So that's still a significant amount of money in our day and time. In the ancient world, that would have been a huge amount of money. They did some interesting things. They sometimes swore sacred oaths to say that they were going to obey and play by the rules, but obviously not everybody was true to their word. In some cases, giving you the quote here, athletes uttered curses against their opponents in hopes of getting the upper hand, and for those who lost, they sometimes made their way home by using the back alleys. So this was a big, big deal. If you won, certainly, but even if you lost, there was some unpleasantness associated with that. When Paul uses the expression, know ye not, that is expressed with the perfect tense, we know from previous classes the perfect tense says that something happened in the past and there is an ongoing act, an ongoing tense that the point kind of continues on, and that tells us that the Corinthians, they knew about this. That's one more way, I think, of reinforcing what was said as far as the Corinthians understood the culture that they lived in, and the Olympic Games were a big, big deal. A little bit more as far as a quote, since the days of Alexander the Great, athletic contests held in public had become popular in the entire Greek world, and the world came in crowds to these athletic fields. We have it today. What will draw people? I mean, we just saw that sort of with the eclipse. There's a narrow band that people decided that they were going to get married during the eclipse, or they're coming from distant countries. What draws people today?
Sports.
All right. For example, maybe be a little more specific on that.
Football, baseball.
All right. Some of the championship games. Sure. You have those kinds of things. Anything else which will really draw people?
Famous musicians.
All right. It may be a concert.
Music.
Oh, all right. That kind of dovetails with Mom, with what Mom was saying. But okay, that's fine. She talked about concerts. But there are events where people learn about it and they will come from all over the world. Well, that's not anything new. People were doing that same kind of thing in ancient times. When you think about athletics, they were doing things a little differently back then as far as the self-control. But if you're going to participate in the Olympics, are you going to be able to participate in training just once or twice a week? What do you see when people train for the Olympics?
It takes over their life.
It does. It really does. It's an all-consuming thing. What else do you see? Or how do you see that as far as it being all-consuming? Do some start young? You find, below the age of 10 sometimes, they're thinking, I want to be an Olympian. I want to win the championship. What else do you see? Well, do you find sometimes that they have some physical problems, some health problems, because the body was asked to do some things that it probably wouldn't? So they're willing to sacrifice their health sometimes, maybe not in the younger years, but a little bit later. What else? Marcia?
For some sports,
yeah.
So the parents basically give them up.
Pretty much. I mean, the child is sent to be trained by someone else and just dedicate his or her life to that. And we think of that as kind of extreme. A lot of parents wouldn't want to do that. But this is the background that Paul is using to say, as I'm describing the Christian life for you, this is the commitment that we're talking about when it comes to living a Christian life. Do you always see that kind of level of commitment from people today? We don't. And sometimes it is a rare thing. If you go back and you look at ancient athletics, they when it came to the games that we're talking about, they competed in six events: wrestling, jumping, javelin, discus throwing, and then you have Paul's analogy that he uses here, the racing and boxing analogy. We don't know the exact qualifications for the games, but if you go back and you look at the Olympics, which were a little different than what we're talking about here, we do have some strict rules. Only free men could participate in the games, and they had to provide proof that for 10 months before the contest, they had participated in the necessary preliminary training, as well as spending at least 30 days in exercises in the gymnasium. The winner and his family were honored, and when he returned to the native city, a breach was made in the city walls to allow him to enter, and that indicated that with a man such as they had, that there was no need for walls for city defense. He also received a prominent seat at all future contests in the Greek games. Only one won the prize. Second, third place finishers could obtain a public mention, but only the first place winner received a prize. This was, just like today, you get the gold medal, this was a huge, huge deal. And Paul is saying, you are like someone who is running an Olympic race, and you need to run well. You need to make sure that you win the prize. We'll say a little bit more about that momentarily. Anything else come to mind before we say a little bit more? All right, let's go on and see what else we've got. As you look at verse 24, Paul says that the Christians have a race, and what must they do? You're in this spiritual contest, and what's your obligation if you're a Christian? You need to
run.
You need to run. What do you think the verb tense is there? Past, present, or future? You need to continue to run. This is ongoing action. He says you need to run this race, continuous action, for what purpose? So that you may
win.
Other translations may say attain or obtain. And that, of course, is going to be the eternal, that is going to be the everlasting prize. When you think about someone running, that might involve a number of things. It could be joy. It could be fear. It could be exercise. But the kind of running that we're talking about here, what comes to mind? What springs to mind? The running.
Physical.
All right. It is physical. Anything else?
Long distance.
Yeah. We're in it for the long haul, right? If we're thinking about Christianity from a short-term perspective, hey, I'll do this for a little while and see how it goes. Paul says that's not God's version of Christianity. So what else?
Lifelong.
Hmm?
Lifelong.
All right. It is going to be not just long-term. It is going to be lifelong. Anything else?
Have the goal in mind.
Yeah. There has to be some goal. The person who is going to run this kind of race obviously was looking to be first. As we think about living the Christian life, our goal needs to be heaven. People have a lot of goals in life. But when it comes to the Christian life, it's possible for us to sort of have heaven down here as just sort of one of the smaller goals, one of the lesser goals in life. But God says that needs to be the top goal. Don't do anything which is going to interfere with that top goal. Commitment, perseverance, all those things would be involved. When you think about running a race, for these people, I don't know if there were any obstacles, but as you're running today, let's look at it from a negative perspective. Anybody ever see a police show, maybe cops or something else, where somebody is running from law enforcement? What happens when the bad guy is running from the cops? Well, what's the advantage of being the cop if you're chasing somebody? Let's turn it around.
Well, you got the gun.
That really wasn't where I was headed. If you're chasing somebody, what advantage do you have? Well, you have the radio, you got the gun, okay.
You're following them.
Yeah, that's it. All right. If you are the person who's in the lead, what are you having to do? You're having to be concerned about the guy behind you, but you're also having to
look ahead.
You're having to look ahead and figure out, okay, do I jump the fence, or do I climb the fence, or do I go around this, do I tip this over? And that takes time. So if you're the guy who's trying to outfox the police, you're already really at a disadvantage. But if you are the person who is the chaser instead of the chased, you have a distinct advantage because you can kind of see, okay, I don't want to do that. That was a mistake for him. That cost him a few seconds. I'm going to take a straight shot, or I'm going to go around the opposite way, those kinds of things. So in looking at that from what we have here, we don't have, thankfully, someone who has never run the course before. We have Jesus. He's already navigated a lot of those obstacles. He is the trailblazer, as we learn about in the book of Hebrews, but we still do have some obstacles in life. So that running is not always going to be the easiest thing in the world, but God says, I want you to run. You might stumble sometimes, you might fall sometimes, but God's will for us is to go ahead and get up, whether the conditions seem favorable or not, and to keep going. Each step we take gets us closer to eternal life. I'm not sure some people always see the Christian life in that way, but that is true. Every day that we live and we are a faithful Christian, we're one step closer, one day closer to heaven. And that's how we need to see life. A lot of people think, well, you know, I'm young and I'm going to live for pretty much forever. And the older you get, you realize that the steps become fewer and fewer. But we need to make sure that we're faithful. Anything you want to add or ask before we talk about this word, obtain or attain or win? Tim, to you, and then we'll take Teresa's hand.
We need to fully understand that there's going to be sacrifices that we're going to have to make. And we're going to have to figure out whether we think heaven is worth those sacrifices.
Yeah.
I mean, we know that it is, because that's the ultimate prize, as it says here. But a lot of people don't look at it that way. They look at the here and now. They don't look at later on. Matter of fact, I had somebody close to me, not close to me personally, but close to me marriage-wise in the family, that was a Christian, used to preach to Sandy and I all the time. And then one day she came over to our house and she said to me, she said, what would you say if I said I don't believe Jesus is who he said he was? I said, you have a serious problem and you need to work on that. And then she says, well, I'm not afraid to die. I said, well, it's not about being afraid to die. There's a lot of people that aren't afraid to die. It's what happens after you die. I don't know if she ever straightened herself out or not, because she was up in Michigan for just a while, but she lived in Florida, so we didn't see her very often. But
You gave superb answers. You gave excellent answers. Jesus talked about counting the cost over in Luke chapter 14 and verse 28, and that's what people need to do. That's what the athletes had to do. People today, sometimes, if they want a certain job, and that's, you know, maybe that's going to be hard on the body, maybe that's going to require a lot of education, maybe the hours are going to be intensive. You think about a lawyer working 80, 90 hours a week. There are some attorneys that have to put in those kinds of hours, especially in the younger years before they get seniority in the firm. Are you willing to put in what's necessary to, you know, it's kind of the reward versus work ratio. And God says when it comes to the Christian life, you just can't drift through life and have a life which pleases me. It's going to cost you something. And for some people, it's cost them their very lives. But Jesus said it is worth it, but you need to be willing to count the cost and pay the cost if you want the reward. Risk versus reward sometimes in the world, in this case, the risk is not risk that there is no reward. It's just, it's going to be costly. Trace and then Don.
Well, we have to understand that bad things are going to happen.
Yes.
A child may die. A husband may die. Illness, who knows what. Bad things are going to happen. And God will, he will hold our hand while we work our way through it. But we can't turn our back on him.
Yeah. Think about David. Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of
death,
thou art with me. So that lays it out very simply, very plainly. And it can be very dark and very dreary sometimes when you go down a certain part of the Christian life. But God says, I will see through it, I will get you through it, but you're going to have to hang in there, and you count the cost and you stick with it regardless of what happens. Don? It's sometimes easier said than done, but it is possible. Don?
Live in the spirit of imperishables. And if you believe that your spirit is imperishable, then that spirit's going to go one place or two places.
Correct.
It's going to hell, it's going to go to heaven. And if you don't believe in heaven or hell, then don't worry about it. You're going to die. And you're going to be just brought out there and wherever you want to die. But if you believe that there is hereafter, the spirit is going to go someplace. God tells us that. So, yeah, for my sake, I want to go where it's forever and enjoy, not in burning up in hell.
Yeah, and the Bible tells us to run well, and that will be the consequence.
Yes.
Okay, let's talk about this word obtain, attain, or win. That's also used over in the book of Philippians, chapter 3, verses 12 and 13. It occurs twice in Philippians chapter 3 and verse 12. We've also got the word prize that's used in Philippians chapter 3 and verse 14. Philippians uses the word to say there is this great prize out there if you're willing to run the race, but it has not yet been reached. Here in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, it challenges everybody to a strenuous and disciplined Christian life. We talked about a few minutes ago the fact that if you were going to participate in the Olympics, even today, how many people can get the prize as far as first place? Just one. But when it comes to the Christian life, what's true? It's available for every single person. That is an amazing offer. It is a wonderful promise, and yet that is what God says. One source said, and this is a great point, an important point, entering the race is not what? Entering the race doesn't mean that you have won it or that you will win it. But we do have that option to be faithful, and we need to make sure that we continue with it. This little quote as well, and then we'll see, talk about verse 25. The prize was generally a wreath, but the winner was also rewarded with fame and popularity. Isn't it amazing what people will do for something small and in the end, insignificant? What are some of the rewards that people will knock themselves out for in life? That, I mean, really, you look at it and you think, all that for this?
Trophies?
Yeah. Golden Globe Award, by the world standard, big, big deal. But in the end, nothing. What else? Somebody gets a trophy? Somebody gets a ribbon?
Crown.
All right. I don't know who. Okay, Betty gave that answer. That's really good. There's some people who really, you think about beauty pageants or people who really, really want a crown, maybe they're looking for a monetary prize. Anything else that doesn't last?
Position of power.
Yeah, I think that's another one that sticks out. The people, they will dedicate their life to, you know, maybe becoming president, maybe an office that is less than that, or maybe the CEO of a particular company, and they're able to reign or rule for a period of time. And then one day they're all shriveled up in a nursing home, and you say, really? You are that person? You had that job for a period of time, and this is what you become? And that is kind of a dismal feeling, I think, for people. But if there's nothing beyond this life, then truly, it's a sad state. Mom?
There's a story about some famous baseball players, I think it was baseball, that they were honored with some sort of expensive ring. And there was a display of them in a museum, a whole bunch of rings. Somebody broke in, grabbed them, and melted them down and sold them for their gold.
Yeah, or they end up in a pawn shop. Well, that's actually happened with some people, some championship rings. So sad, but that's not what we're striving for. We're striving for an eternal crown and eternal blessings from God. At the beginning of verse 25, we find another particular word, and that is the word strive. What comes to mind when you hear the word strive?
Trying really hard.
All right, that would be a good definition. We're really trying hard for something. Anything else?
Determined.
That would be another one. Anything else?
Perseverance.
Yeah. Here's a person who will not quit. Here's the person who says, this is something that matters to me as much as anything else in life, and I am going to persevere. There is no one, there is no thing which is going to stop me. And there are people who do that. It's kind of amazing sometimes. I may use this for a little devotional sometime soon, but read it the other day about some people who were illegal in New York. They went out and they needed to buy lunch, didn't have quite enough money, so they went out and used their lunch money to buy 10 oranges. And they thought that they were going to sell those. 10 oranges for $10, they thought that they could get $20 for the oranges. Well, they had two stolen from them, but even after the two that were stolen, they were still able to sell those 10 oranges for a total of $20. So here are people, you know, they came to the U.S., apparently didn't have a lot of money, just the clothes on their back, but they decided that they were going to persevere. They were somehow going to make it. And that should be true for us as we live the Christian life. We're going to strive. That word is expressed with the present tense, used seven times in the New Testament. Classical Greek, it described conflict, contest, debates, and even legal suits. So here is the person out there on the athletic field. You might think that the person is wheezing. The person, their body is kind of heaving from all of the exertion, and it's very, very difficult, but here is the person who says, I am going to get through this regardless of the cost. You find sometimes people in the later years coming to services. Fried Hardeman, several years. I've not seen the guy. He may be in a nursing home now. Maybe he's deceased. I don't know. But there was this fellow. He had virtually no arms and no legs. And he comes down. You know, he's just on the floor, pretty much prone on the floor, and just, you know, moving with basically stubs, going from place to place. He is the only guy I have ever seen like that. And he would make his way down to the front. He wanted to be at the FHU lectures, and he was there for several years. His body was short enough that somebody literally could have picked him up like a sack of potatoes and just taken him from place to place. But, he wanted to be there and did listen, and one of the most amazing things I think I've ever seen. But, you know, that would put a lot of people who live the Christian life to shame. So the stress here is on personal discipline. Anything that you want to say before we talk about self-control? Don, to you.
I'm sure you don't mean this, but, you know, physically and human, I think anybody that has a goal, and that goal may be way out there, higher than what we think it would be, but as long as that goal was within the Christian brain, I said all that power to him, because a person like that can stir up people that become Christians later.
Mm-hmm.
So I clap my hands at anybody that does, stepped up and say, I plan on doing this. I plan on doing that. As long as it's reasonable. So I say, go get it.
Yeah. There are some people. Sometimes it's in the spiritual realm. Sometimes it's in the physical realm. But you do find those go-getters who say, this really matters to me, and I'm going to make it. There are people who set goals. Sometimes they get married and they set goals. They want to retire at a certain age, or and they practically work themselves to death. Or they have some other goal. Maybe they want to see the world. And people have set some very, very high goals, some amazing goals. I read this story. I get this bulletin from this guy in Canada. I think he's a member of the Christian church. And he had a goal to take what was shiny and build stuff out of it. Nobody listened to him. But for years, he kind of had a garage, and he would take tinfoil, other shiny objects, and make religious things. Well, long story short, he finally died. Somebody opened up the garage, saw this stuff, which was amazing. Nobody wanted it, but now it's in the Smithsonian. I mean, just phenomenal. He spent many, many years, several decades, designing all these things. And in the end, his goal was not only met, it was exceeded by far. And you do find people who do some amazing things sometimes, and that's really what Christians are trying to accomplish as well. Back to you.
I would like to see younger people, male or female, in their earlier years, if they have the ability to do it and the financial backing to do it, whatever, to get into politics. Because if we don't get Christians into politics, we're going to be run over. We're going to have non-Christians running just, you know, whatever, whether it be the state, whether it be the United States, or whatever. If we don't get Christian people in there that will stop some of the things that we're seeing going on now, we're going to lose it.
And that is a noteworthy goal, to want to serve society in such a way, in this case our country, in a notable way. Ideally, we can have people who are well-placed in law enforcement, politics, virtually every aspect of society, school systems, key parts of our nation, so that they can influence people for good and right. So that's important. And if people are really focused on heading to heaven, then hopefully they can also help our nation get back and moving in a good direction. Tim?
We need to understand that we need good people to have goals, and they need to meet them. But we need to understand that Satan has a goal, and he's never going to give up. Never.
Yeah.
Till the end of time, he's going to keep on. And you need to understand that.
Yeah. He fights a lot harder than Christians do.
A lot harder.
I mean, the word perseverance was used by Tina, I think, earlier, and he does persevere. He is an expert at that. Very good.
More humans than we got.
Yeah. Let's talk about self-control for a little bit. Is that a problem for a lot of people, self-control?
Oh, yes.
Where do you see it? All right, it could be eating. A lot of people will go out, and if it's a buffet or there's something that you can have an unlimited amount of, self-control, especially if you really like it, is tough. Where else do you see it?
Well,
Self-control.
Children at the checkout counter.
Yes, you do see some self-control issues with young people, older people as well. So it's not something that's limited to age. Where else do you see self-control problems?
Out on the road.
Yeah. There was a lady, I don't remember what it was. Did you see her? She thought that God told her with the eclipse that she needed to take some lives. So she went out and shot at a couple people. She hit one guy in the neck and another vehicle. She took out the windshield, it sounded like, and then there was some shards that apparently injured that particular driver. So, yeah, you do see it there as well. Anything else? Self-control issues. What about anger? People get upset, and what happens?
Explode.
All right, they explode, and it may not come to blows, but people do have some verbal altercations because they're upset. Tim?
Their tongue.
Yeah, speech, maybe tied in a little bit with anger, but yes, people do lose control. When you look at what Paul says here about self-control, it's expressed with the present tense, and it's also used back in 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 9. It's the opposite of self-gratification. That's tough, and all of us fail at some point when it comes to this, but as one source said, the proper attitude of the believer is to be one of self-control over all desires, especially sexual desires. One source went on to say that those who taught the gymnastic art prescribed to their disciples the kind of meat or food that was proper, the quantity they were to eat, and the hours at which they were to eat it. They prescribed to them likewise the hours of their exercise and rest. They forbade them the use of wine and women. If you were going to compete in these Olympic games, Olympic-style games, I mean, they pretty much controlled your life. This is what you eat. This is when you go to sleep. And these are the things that you do. These are the things that you avoid. The people, I think, for the most part, didn't object because what have we seen? What did they want? What was the end result, the goal?
That prize.
They wanted to be, they wanted to be on top. They wanted that goal, that earthly, that secular wreath that was not going to last. We're looking at something which is going to be eternal, something which is not temporal, so we should be just as willing to fight just as hard, if not harder. When you look at the word which is translated incorruptible at the end of verse 25, that's found about half a dozen times in the New Testament. It describes what constantly endures, that which is no longer subject to corruption, that which is immortal and imperishable. The opposite of that, of course, would be corruptible. That describes something that perishes. Another quick quote here, and then I'll stop for hands. The garland of the victor of the Isthmian Games was of pine leaves, at an earlier time parsley, in the Olympic Games of wild olive, yet these were the most coveted honors in the whole Greek world. It's amazing what people will fight over. Have you ever seen kids fight over something stupid?
Marbles. Yeah, it's marbles.
I remember when Beeson's were here, Keith talked about the fact that his kids fought over a rock. Who got the bigger rock? I remember growing up, the garbage truck came through about the same time that we got home from school, and there was like a little Hot Wheel car. I mean, the thing was dinged up, battered up, of real no value. It fell out of the back of the garbage truck. And I was with about seven kids, and they all fought over, probably including me, who was going to take that car, that little Hot Wheel car that had fallen out of the garbage truck. It is amazing what people will fight for. Even dogs. You know, a little scrap of meat. I mean, it's just gristle. And yet, what will the dogs do? Brrr, you know, it's mine. You know, are you kidding me? But people will fight and struggle over some of the dumbest stuff. And yet God says, here is what really matters. And a lot of people just throw up their hands and say, well, it doesn't really matter. As Tim said earlier, I'm good. Final thought before we shut it down.